Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sari Ibrahim. Today, I'm interviewing Jamie P. Hopkins. He is the managing partner of Wealth Solutions at Carson Group. He also serves as finance professor of practice at Crane University's Hyder College of Business. A nationally recognized writer and researcher, Jamie is a regular contributor to Forbes, Investment News, and Market Watch. A highly sought-after speaker in the financial services industry, Jamie has also been featured on Wall Street Journal, podcasts, NPR Radio, and Fox Radio, and has made multiple appearances for NBC 10 Philadelphia, PBS, and USA Today. He's been published in dozens of financial, educational, and legal journals and developed educational materials for the American College's CFP, CLU, CHFC, and RICP programs, along with CE programs for attorneys. Jamie is the author of Rewirement, Rewiring the Way You Think About Retirement, which released its second edition in 2021. Additionally, Jamie has co-authored three textbooks and has had two ebooks on retirement planning, Retirement Success in 10 Steps, How to Stretch Your Dollar to Last Through Your Golden Years, and Retirement Risks, How to Plan Around Uncertainty for a Successful Retirement. Jamie was selected by Investment News as one of the top 40 financial services professionals under the age of 40 in 2015. And in 2017, he was selected by the American Bar Association as one of the top 40 young attorneys in the country. Jamie was also named a Lawyer of Distinction and elected to the prestigious role of an American Bar Foundation Fellow. Before joining Carson, Jamie was an associate professor of taxation at the American College of Financial Services in the Retirement Income Program and served as the director of the New York Life Center for Retirement Income. Jamie Hopkins, welcome to our podcast.
Hey, Sari, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I'm excited to interview you. I've watched a lot of your other videos and your other podcasts. You're doing a lot of big things in the financial services industry, so I'm really excited to have you on our podcast. Before we jump into that, do you mind sharing with us more about your background and what you do?
Yeah, so I appreciate it, Sari, and thanks for having me on. And, I'm sure hopefully we'll try to make it fun for your listeners too. So what do I do? It's a great question. And I'll start off with a little bit of a story. Somebody asked me this summer, Bert White, who's a friend of mine and I work with too. And he said, like, well, Jamie, like, what's your brand out there? And I was like, it's probably like, a retirement guy and like does funny videos on LinkedIn with like note cards. And that's probably my brand. And that's okay. I'm not upset by that. I do those things, but they're kind of like the side things that I do, which is really interesting, right? Like I'm known not for the core stuff I do, but for like side things that are more like social media oriented. And that's become my brand. Really what I've done now over the past, I'd say 7 years, is like a builder of solutions, programs, and companies, which is not, and I didn't really think about that until recently, that like, that's really my story. So like going back in time, I built the RICP program. And I know that you're studying right now for some more education. And, we scaled that up and like, I don't know, like 20x the revenue of it, put over 20,000 advisors through that program after I built it. So like I go back and start thinking about things. I was like, oh, like I was a program and solution builder, did that, did my own consulting company, built that up and ran it for a number of years, then joined Carson and kind of professionalized our retirement program, rolled that out. Then I took over the coaching company and built an LMS platform with the team here, which is a phenomenal team. And we kind of redid the whole coaching offering and rolled that back out, which was great. We launched the podcast, and then we have a podcasting offering inside of Carson now for advisors. So that's up there. FinPod is a company that Broderick and I have spun up inside. And then this last year, two major things is I launched a joint venture insurance company that Carson is part of, and then a lead to client generation program, which is easily the biggest initiative that I've built. Mm-hmm. So going back, it's a lot of builds, mostly for the advisor related world. So that's where I spend a lot of my time. So people just like hear me rambling off different things. But yeah, boil it down. I like building things for advisors to better serve their clients and democratize advice for more people.
Well, okay. I mean, that's a lot. I don't even know what to unpack first. besides everything you're doing now, you're also, I could tell, very big on education, considering mm-hmm. all the credentials you have and licenses. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I have, you're right. Like I've got a lot of designations of the three master's degrees, a JD, and I'm a PhD dropout. So I started a PhD program and dropped out of it. And that's a, you know, a little bit of advice on that too. Somebody asked me this last week about going directly from school in financial services into a master's. And they looked at me and they were, I think they were looking for validation that I should, that they should do it. And I was like, I don't advise it. I do think that people benefit from going into the workforce for a couple years before they go back into school. Now, like, I went directly into law school. You know, I think the legal field's a little different. I would probably advise most people just go directly into law school. I think it's fine. In financial planning, I don't think so. I think it's good to go get some experience out there on the ground first. I believe the same thing about an MBA, which I have. I think getting experience first is important. And then professional degrees and designations, I think, are extremely important. I'm a believer in lifelong learning, but we have to be able to put them into practice too, right? Like knowledge, I meant this, like knowledge without execution, right, is just smarter people doing the same dumb things. And so I said that on stage one time. Somebody wrote it down. It's like my favorite quote of myself now is that one. And I, like, I didn't plan it. It just came out on stage. And I like that one now. But yeah, it's like we need to know how to execute on things that we learn. If we just learn them and we don't know how to execute, we're just smarter, but we keep doing the same inefficient things.
God, and you're right. Like, financial planning is not something where you just go to college and then just start working with clients right after graduating from college. It takes a lot of experience. As a matter of fact, I think to sit for the CFP exam, you need like 5 years of 5 years experience, right? So you need the experience for financial planning.
Yeah, I think it's an hour requirement, but most people, it's about 2 years that they get it in. There's some other paths there. But yeah, like the profession says, look, like you're not ready day one. And you're not. Yeah. Like I wasn't ready day one to sit down and really talk to clients. I mean, you get into deep things. It's about like what happens when you die, and like what happens to your kids and your spouse, and like what if you get divorced and you're remarried, and like when you're 23, like I don't know that you're equipped to have those conversations. You can have some of them. And it's not to say people can't go into it, but you will get better over time as you get more experience and like you develop as a person and you better understand yourself too. Our CEO says a saying that I think is beautiful. He's like, you can't love anyone else more than you love yourself. And I think about that when I think about young individuals, they don't always know who they are yet. And so as you start to learn about yourself, you're going to better be able to understand and connect other people too.
Got it. And what I heard from that is it's like with financial planning, it changes a lot, right? Like you mentioned, like marriage, divorce, death, all these different factors. And I was listening to you on another podcast. You were talking about that. It's not like you don't know exactly when you're going to retire. Or you don't know exactly when you're going to die. And I think that ever-changing part has been really changing between like 2020 and now, right? When it comes to financial planning. So do you mind like jumping more into that part of how has it changed? How has retirement planning changed between like 2020 and now?
It's a fantastic question. And I think when I'm going to take a answer it, but take a slightly roundabout way, which I do a lot of times. So just bear with me. I've seen a couple big momentum shifts out there in the financial planning world. One is just this recognition that like planning, it should be central versus products or strategies. That's a big shift. When I started, you know, if you go back in like 2007, planning was still kind of on the side. It was separate. There's been a big shift in the last 15 years. And that's good news. I think the next big shift that's occurring is we started focusing on goal-based planning. We kind of got acceptance of that. It's not 100%, but we got a lot of momentum in the industry towards that over the last 15 years. Since COVID, though, what I saw is that we've actually had an additional shift in an accelerated period of time to two things. One, convenience, that people are looking for convenience. We will pay more for convenience. We started talking about experiences 5, 6, 7 years ago, and experiences are fine, but convenience seems to be winning out. Like I will pay more to have my groceries delivered to my house than I will to go to the store and get them. Convenience and pricing there. So when we think about planning, like how do we deliver convenient planning? And then the second part is the value-based aspect of planning has shifted, and that shifted quickly. And, you know, COVID and 2020 and 2021, you know, no matter where you stood or anything, you took note of the things that you cared about in life, whether it was time spent doing things, whether it was time with family. For some of us, we recognized it because we missed those things. For some, we became very gracious and we showed gratitude for the things we still had in our life. And we left that time period, I think, as a world and said, you know what, like if we're going to put our money towards something, like shouldn't we invest along with our own values? Shouldn't we plan like to a life that we want to live? And so like a life by design, not by default. And we've seen that shift occur in probably a record amount of time. And that's not just ESG investing. It's truly aligning your values and what I say is like life aspirations to your planning. So really going beyond goal-based planning to aspirational, meaning that like you want to be an explorer. So how do you design your plan and your finances and your life to be an explorer? Maybe you can't be a full explorer today. That's okay. That's aspirational, but can you take that cross-country trip? Can you go across this, you know, the ocean to somewhere else, you know, travel? Do you build a plan, right? Do you tell a story, whatever it means to you? And that's shifted so fast. And what we've seen is smaller interactions, meaning like clients aren't coming on and wanting to spend 3 hours going through a PowerPoint and Excel. Mm-hmm. And they want to have deeper, more meaningful conversations about their life, their family, what they love doing. And that shifted really quickly. And so I think that's a big picture answer. I know you're probably asking a little bit more tactical on like what changed, but that one to me is resonating throughout everything. So like the questions we used to ask about like risk tolerance and, you know, when do you want to, you know, what's the dollar amount you want to save for retirement? All those things kind of shifted because they're not really the questions that people want to be asked anymore. Mm-hmm. Like they want you to know who they are, not just the dollars and the math part of financial planning.
Got it. That makes sense. And I definitely agree. I see that change as well. Now, when it comes to like, and answers how comfortable you are answering this, but how, like, as far as strategies, specific strategies, I guess if somebody came to you right now and said, Jamie, I'm looking to retire in the next 10 to 15 years, I'm kind of all over the place between risk strategies, income. What are some things that you would kind of like want to figure out and then maybe recommend? I know the recommending part might take some time, but yeah. What are some things you'd want to find out so that you can make an adequate recommendation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to know how they're going to spend their time in retirement. Mm-hmm. That's like a huge thing right at the front. Like, what is a successful retirement? And even just defining what retirement means to you. Like, that's in my new book, Find Your Freedom. Like, I start with that. I'm like, I need to know what it is. Like, does successful retirement mean you might keep working, but it's work optional? So, I mean, you're working part-time, that you go into like do a totally new field, or is it like the traditional sense you're not working at all? And so start with like what that means to you. And then we can go into the strategy. So you say, hey, look, it's we'll go to the traditional sense. I'm not gonna work anymore. Like, I want to be done. 65, I'm 50, it's 15 years away. I've got all this stuff spread out. So then it's taking an accounting of where you are today. So understanding what assets, investments we have, and trying to some degree align them, and then figure out where there are efficiencies that we can create. So an efficiency might be, we see that the person is entirely in tax deferred 401k money. Yeah. And they have no tax diversification, they have no after tax money. And maybe even their risk capacity or tolerance levels are off, and they are super conservative. And they're like, well, I'm 15 years out. Well, 15 years out is a long runway from an investment standpoint, right? Historically in the US, we've never had a total US stock market that was down over any 10-year rolling period of time. Mm-hmm. So if you have 15 years, like, you can be pretty aggressive. Now, when you get within 5 years of retirement, completely different conversation. But we'll run into people that are 15 years out that are way too conservative. Yep. You'll run into people 5 years out that are way too aggressive, meaning they're just taking on too much risk. Then we want to do an analysis of how much income do they think they're going to need in retirement. 15 years out, you're going to be much more rule of thumb, mm-hmm. some replacement ratio of their current lifestyle. I like the 70 to 80% model, but it's not perfect. But 15 years out, like, just if somebody walks in, they don't want to spend time going through every expenditure they have. Like, that feels like a waste of time for most people. So I'm like, how much do you make today? Oh, I make $200,000. Okay, we need 70 to 80% of that to maintain your current standard of living in retirement. And obviously that's inflation adjusted, but, you know, so maybe we need 140,000, 150,000 of total income. Then we can start thinking about income sources and whether we need to layer in lifetime income, whether it's an annuity, whether they have a pension, whether we're bond laddering, what are going to be our income generation strategies. And so, you know, that's kind of like big picture, some of the tactics. I think especially today, Roth conversions, HSAs, mm-hmm. Making sure we're getting the best out of our tax deductions. If they're a small business owner, 199 Cap A, which is totally in that textbook that you have there. you know, it's one of the biggest changes from Tax Cut and Job Act. Mm-hmm. And so, going along those tax strategies and making sure we're not missing thing and that we're paying attention to our total lifetime taxation. A lot too many people focus year to year and retroactively on tax filing, not tax planning.
Yeah.
And even just doing tax efficient investing today, the tools that are available now from places like Parametrics and others, they're so, and you know, we use Holistiplan, great company out there. FP Alpha is another good company that have added tools that are far beyond what we had 5 years ago to efficient tax planning from an investment side. So if you're not doing that tax overlay, you're leaving tax alpha on the table. Mm-hmm. Probably tax alpha is probably one of the bigger drivers, like more than investment alpha that we can generate, probably closer to planning alpha. You know, but yeah, those are big ones.
And then the difference between tax filing and tax planning is like tax filing is like now, right? This year, like what am I gonna, how am I gonna file this year? Mm-hmm. Whereas tax planning is long term. Is that right?
Yeah. So if you the best way to, I always describe this is tax filing is retroactive, right? It's reactionary. It's the end of the year and we're looking back on what happened last year. And essentially it's reporting. Mm-hmm. Tax planning is looking forward, saying, how do we reduce taxes moving forward? And really what that is doing is it's saying like, what's the least amount of taxes that we're legally required to pay?
Yeah.
I don't like paying optional taxes. And that's what you're doing, right? You are optioning into more taxes if you are not doing tax planning. And anytime I say somebody like, you want to pay some optional taxes, like what's your answer? Like if I asked you, you want to pay some optional taxes? Yeah.
No,
no. Nobody's ever said yes to that yet.
Yeah.
Right. And like that's the point of doing effective tax planning is like you're not paying taxes you didn't have to legally pay. And sometimes it can be as simple as like when you made a contribution. You know, bunching strategies are big ones. And so what that means is like maybe you give $10,000 a year to charity. Mm-hmm. Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should actually stop giving the next 3 years and wait for 4 years and then put $40,000 or $50,000 in 1 year. And you might then go over the itemized standard deduction amount and be actually able to itemize, meaning that you're getting a benefit from them. And so there are strategies like that that could save you $15,000 in taxes over 4 years. And you gave the exact same amount of money to charity. All you did was be smarter about when you gave to maximize your tax deductions and reduce your taxes. So like you changed nothing about the outcome. You gave just as much money over the same period of time. You just gave it in a more efficient manner and reduced your taxes.
And who was, what kind of professional do you think would be best at tax planning? Is it a CPA or a CFP or a combination of both or?
Yeah, I'm gonna go combination. The reality is a lot of the CPAs out there, you engage them from a tax filing perspective. They're not being paid for, nor are they engaged to do that work. It's not that they can't. And there's actually great CPAs out there that you can engage for tax planning. There's nothing wrong with engaging. Like that's a good strategy. If you engage somebody for tax planning, their CPA, absolutely. I do think CPA should be part of the process. CFPs are great. They're not tax professionals. They know some about taxes, but they're not full tax professionals. So my view is it's always a team approach, and the team, like that could be partially you, like you could fill two roles on a team, right? Like, that's perfectly okay. There are punters that are also kickers, right? There's, you know, running backs that also play wide receiver slot positions. Like you can play two roles on a team. You can't play every role, right? Like one person teams that cover everything. You just don't have the skill set for that. And I know that there's a lot of solo entrepreneurs in the advisory space. That's not meaning you can't be a solo person. It just means you have to find the team around you to support you in whatever capacity that means. But I don't believe anybody can be the, you know, the jack of all trades of all things in the financial planning world. You know, people like me and Michael Kitsies, who's a good friend, and Wade Fowle, like none of us are the jack of all trades. And, you know, those are two of the smartest people I know in our profession. And like, they don't know everything, right? Like you're just not going to get there. You have to have good team members around you. So I love the model of like the CFP is kind of the core quarterback coach working with a team of professionals, insurance, investment, tax, legal around them. And whether or not you play two or three of those roles, perfectly fine, trust officer, but tag in the right skill sets as needed. But a CFP CPA combo would be great because you have to align like your investments and long-term goals and aspirations to the tax planning. We can't do tax planning in a silo either.
And speaking of teams, is this what Carson, can you tell us more about like Carson Group and what you guys do?
Yeah, absolutely. So Carson is a national RIA. We really have three businesses. So I think I mentioned earlier, we have a coaching business called Carson Coaching. We work with any advisor out there that basically wants to grow their business. And grow their business doesn't just mean like monetarily. You can grow your business in the sense of impact. You can grow your business in the sense of freedom to yourself, so you can spend more time relaxing. But we mean growth in like the way you define growth. Mostly we're working with RIAs and independent broker, like in IBD advisors. That's kind of our core market. We don't coach outside of the financial advisor world. The next business is Carson Wealth, which was Ron Carson's RIA, like direct to consumer. So we work with end clients. And then Carson Group now is really the engine that drives the ship. That was launched about 7, 8 years ago now. Probably depending on where the market is, you know, on any given day, north of 20, 21 billion under management in that RIA now. And there we have advisors that partner with us, and then we provide a lot of that like back end and middle office support. So from marketing, your websites, compliance, podcast services, coaching, content, and then like all the advanced solutions, trading, investments, trust, tax, insurance. And so we have tried to become that core part of those advisors' teams so they can focus on being an advisor working with their clients, and they don't have to worry about like, hey, I got to go shoot another video and create marketing. Hey, I got to go vet this tech company and see if we're going to integrate them. Or I don't have to go manage my investments because I got a team of CFAs that are managing those. And then the same thing, we have a tax company that we own. We do tax filings, we do tax planning. We've got an insurance company that we got a joint venture with. So whether you're a commission or fee only, we can deliver those products out to your clients. And again, like we're not captive. So if you say, hey, I need to go somewhere else and do a direct product from somewhere or direct solution, like that's okay too. We're fiduciaries, put the client's interest first. But we're going to try to, you know, what I like to say is like scale the family office or democratize the family office. That's only been available to a tiny percentage of the world, which the reality is, look, everybody should be entitled to that level of quality planning, not just the ultra high net worth families.
That was, I had that question. I was going to ask you, do you see it? Do you see like a rise in the family office approach? And I
Yeah,
guess, yeah.
I do, and that's not what everybody says. And there is an important detail as part of that. I think people want the choice to have those services. And the reality is this industry, not profession, but this industry has kept that, you know, for reasons that make sense from a monetary standpoint, but has kept that separate from the masses. We didn't have the technology, we didn't have the scale, we didn't have the right delivery. What, you know, my driving why is, in fact, like my parents didn't go to college. My dad passed away when I was 8. He did, you know, construction and died on a construction site. My mom doesn't trust this industry, right? Like we lived on Social Security. You know, I've grew up in a, you know, single parent, non-college educated household. Like we didn't get financial advice. Like we needed financial advice. We needed insurance, all those things. And like my drive is to make sure that everybody, like my mom, whenever I'm done walking around this earth, like has the ability to get advice. Doesn't mean everybody's going to get it, but has the ability to get that advice. So that scaling of the family office is that you can walk into a Carson Wealth location in 5 years and say, hey, I want help with term insurance. Oh, okay, cool. I want a financial plan and only a financial plan. Cool. I want my investments here, but I don't want anything else. Cool. I, you know, want my legal documents drafted and I don't want to be sent out to an attorney. I want you guys to be able to deliver that. Great. I want that tax planning and filing done here. Great. And maybe you only pick one of those services because that's all you need at the time, right? Like 27-year-old might only need term insurance. They don't really need a full financial plan. They're not saving much. That's fine. You know, and but as you move throughout your life, you have that optionality of scrolling through and you kind of think of a sliding scale of like, hey, I want all these things, or hey, I want to back off. And maybe you get really good halfway through your planning that, like, you don't need a full-time AUM all services advisor, and you just want to scale back that a little bit. Today, there's not a great model for that, but that's where we want to be. And I think that that all gets to trust, and like, you trust this offering to move forward or scale back. And that's not like, hey, you only have one option, and it's 1%, and like, that's it. Maybe I only need a service for a year, so I don't want to pay all of that. And that's where we want to be able to give people that optionality. So scale up the family office, but provide the optionality for clients to pick the services that they need at any given time.
That makes a lot of, thanks for mentioning that. That makes a lot of sense. And then I want to kind of finish off the last couple of questions with, so you it looks like you've written a couple of books in the past and you have a few upcoming. Do you mind sharing more about that part?
Yeah, happy to. I've been a terrible writer for a long period of time, just like really bad. I write a lot. I don't know if any of it's any good. So I wrote two ebooks for Forbes, kind of starting off. Then I wrote three textbooks, which I think a couple of them, at least two of them, are still out there. But like nobody wants textbooks, and you can't give away ebooks in person. So I then set out on the journey to write rewirement, and I have a trademark on that term, which is like changing the way you think about retirement. And what I saw was that we have this really rigid view of retirement today, and that we need to break that down because you get to define retirement, and that we learn really only about the saving for retirement. And I say SNS, saving, not spending. It's all we learn. We don't learn how to spend. We learn how to save. Everything is about putting money away, not about how to spend it. And so we also have to change this dynamic in our mind about getting to retirement. It's really about spending, not saving. And it's hard. And so we have to get there. And that's this whole idea of rewirement. I've done two editions of that. I had a short-lived TV show on Cheddar TV around it too. So I don't know, we did eight episodes or something like that. That was all we were supposed to do. It's like a mini series. And I interviewed a bunch of retirees about how they like changed their lives and rewired their life to find that passion in retirement, which was really fun. Then on November, mid-November of 2022, the next book is coming out, which is called Find Your Freedom. And financial planning for living a life on purpose. And that one is really more about the financial planning promise. Like, what does it mean to get real financial planning? And that starts with a lot of designing your own life and like knowing yourself. And it's about happiness, right? Like I always tell people this. I know we did the optional taxes, but when I ask people, like, what if I could give you two financial plans? Like one financial plan, it's the most optimal financial plan that's ever been built. It'll create the most amount of money you've ever had. You can meet all your spending needs, and you'll be like semi-happy, right? Like not awful, not like super happy. And that like might be most of our resting state. Or I've got a financial plan for you. You're not going to die with any money, but you're going to live the happiest life you could ever possibly live. And you'll like have enough money to do all this stuff, but like you're not going to be super wealthy, but you'll be the happiest that anybody's ever been. Like, which plan do you want? Like, I think most people go, I'd rather be happier, right? Like, yeah, I think I'll choose the happy plan. And it's a happy meal. I don't know. But what that gets to is the fact that like we are willing to trade off money for happiness, and we should be willing to do that. And honestly, our finances are a means to the end. They're not the end. This is not a high score game where we're just trying to die with as most money possible. And if that is your game, like that's a plan, but it's not what most people want. Most people want to live a life of meaning and follow their dreams and actually get that time to define it and enjoy it.
Out of all the clients I've sat with and talked to, I've never looked at it from that perspective. It's always kind of like a logical perspective. Like, how much can we accumulate? What's the income going to be? How do we turn on income in a tax favored manner? And yeah, I mean, that completely just changed my perspective, just the happier part.
Well, because we've been trained and we're good at that, right? Like we can work on numbers and strategies, and then, but yeah, if you start asking all these people, it's like, what if this plan failed, but you were happier than you've ever been in your life? Like, would that be a good outcome? And I bet you everyone's going to tell you yes.
So, Jim, it was a pleasure having you on the podcast. I really enjoyed interviewing you and talking to you. How can listeners connect with you, learn more about Carson Group?
Yeah, well, Carson Group's easy. It's carsongroup.com. So feel free to check out there our podcast, commentary, all those things. Myself, my website's also easy. It's jamiehopkins.com. So Jamie. You can kind of find anything that I'm putting out there, videos, articles, content. And then I'm mostly responsive on Twitter. So it's at retirement risks with an S at the end. So I got a little blue check mark and all those things. And I don't spend as much time on there as I used to, but like if you write to me and tag me or send me a DM, I do respond to everybody eventually, but it might not be like at the same moment. But yeah, I'm pretty active on, and I found FinTwit, Financial Twitter, to be a really supportive group of individuals. And I find it to be a really amazing community of people. So yeah, I kind of support that group, even though like personally Twitter and social media feels like work to me. It doesn't feel like fun, but I think that's an amazing group of people that are out there and supportive of each other.
Yeah, I'll be sure to add in all the links you mentioned in the show notes below, and I'm looking forward to bringing you back on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, check out the book in November, and we'll send you one too. So you have a nice signed copy and you can read it after you've done your tax book.
Sounds good. Yeah, thank you. To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's FIN assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.